this show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Welcome back, Indie Comic Book Noise listeners. We're here with episode 429. And when I say we're here, I mean three of the four hosts. So we're going to have a top-heavy episode. By top-heavy, I mean Canada. We've got Phil dialing in. And we also have Kevin.
Dialing in.
And me, Andy, the LA Rabbit. Indie Comic Book Noise is part of the Deliberate Noise Network. You can get our old episodes at the website, indiecomicbooknoise.com. Sometimes we have problems. You can always send us a little message on Facebook or Twitter. The Twitter connection is Indie Comic Book N. We have our individual Twitters as well. We don't have any sponsors, but like I said, part of that wonderful Deliberate Noise Network. Check out our sister shows. Marvel Noise is a great example where you sometimes hear Kevin and I. And Derek, the boss, has his own show as well. It's really, we're proud to be part of that family. As you heard from the warning at the beginning, there may be a little salty language. But as I always like to say, I don't really think we ever get that controversial. Once in a while, Kevin says some crazy shit, but usually I edit that out. We talk about whatever we want on this show. But usually it has to have an independent focus. So it can be media tie-ins, comics, webcomics. And this episode, I've decided it's our special San Diego Comic-Con episode. Woohoo!
Oh, not the Torpedo Comics episode.
No, I am not going to the Torpedo Comics event.
I thought we were doing a Black Hammer episode.
Oh, we are.
That's pretty much...
We just didn't tell Andrew about it.
That's pretty much every episode. But we're the only one we're missing is Super Steve. Super Steve, wherever you are out there, we love you. But as I said, boys, I have some Comic-Con interesting things. I thought I'd get back to it. As old-timey listeners may know, I used to go to Comic-Con, not taking a little break these last couple years because it seems like it's become quite the expensive, tricky business. Most of the people I know now go on press or pro badges. And
you can only meet so many Game of Thrones actors.
And also just the hotels and everything becomes a big lottery system. But it is great if you get a chance to go. I have gone. There is news that leaks out. And I often used to joke that you can find out more news not being there, just monitoring your computer. But one piece of news I wanted to mention that's of relevant to our listeners is... they have greenlit a fabulous Furry Freak Brothers show.
Furry Freak Brothers. Really?
Yes.
Why didn't they see this?
That's that old indie one?
Yes, that's the one. Yeah. I've talked about Fat Freddy's catalog. It's going to be animated.
Haven't they made a movie before for that, like back in the day?
There were all those teases of it. And there were even some test shots you can find.
But I thought like in the 80s or something they had like a cartoon. Maybe I'm thinking a different property, but I remember when I was listening off indie movies one time, I could have swore that was one of them.
No, like I said, not that I'm aware of anyways. I know there were some, like I said, test shots, and you can find some little segments on YouTube. Yeah. I don't know if they were from the production or fan-made or whatever, but this is supposed to be 8 22-minute episodes to debut in early 2020. I don't... looking at the press release, I do not see a distribution yet, but I know sometimes Comic-Con gets stuff before distribution. I remember one year I went to the panel for the TV show Metal Hurlant, and I don't know that ever ended up getting...
Well, I have that on DVD. Remember I bought it on Blu-ray recently?
So, but I don't know that made it to a U.S. TV distribution, so this may not, but I'm going to keep my ears pinned. So... Well, I think that had a European distribution, but I don't know that it was on TV.
Yeah, no, that's
over
where
here.
I ordered it from, yeah.
So I'm fingers crossed on this, but it's people...
What is it about? Because all I've ever heard is the name from you, but I've never, like, what do I expect from the show?
It's these three wacky stoners who always get into crazy adventures, almost always There's Fat Freddy, the one I identify with. He has the cat, and he's kind of a bumbling guy who's always getting ripped off. And then Franklin, I guess you would say, is the leader, has his big cowboy hat, and Phineas is kind of the nerdy one. And they're just having humorous hijinks, usually this involving was popular drugs.
Back in the day, like, it was huge?
Or? I don't know how huge it was. You'll still see the reprints. There isn't a huge amount of material. I have,
like, it's weird that it's coming back now.
Yeah, I have the collected comics of it, like the omnibus thing that they reprinted, uh-huh. And it fits in one, you know, good size, but not considering how long the comic went. The Gilbert Shelton who created also did Wonder Warthog and a bunch of other characters, and I think a lot of those guys weren't high volume, but I think that stoner culture has come back around, certainly here in the States. I feel like with the legalization of marijuana, we're seeing a large volume of that kind of product come back and things. And it's from the executive producers of Workaholics, King of the Hill, American Dad,
okay, I love,
and Silicon Valley. So I'm unsure, because it just seems, you're right, like, for a property that's been pretty slow, like, I don't know when the last issue came out, but it seemed like it was something that might come out every 5 years or something like that, like, very sporadic, and I think he's moved on to other projects, but I'm hopeful. Like I said, I'll keep my eyes peeled for 2020, but that was just some San Diego news, and I'll have some other, and so they're doing a talent panel at Comic-Con.
Okay, so they must be, full force ahead.
Yeah, with any... Well, I mean, if they greenlit the 8 episodes, I assume they'll do those all kind of in a batch.
Yeah.
But I'm not that into animated TV production, so I'm unsure.
But I think this is something you gotta check out, though.
Oh, for sure. If I can get a bootleg or however it's gonna happen. But I'm hoping it gets... There seems like there's so many channels and Hulu and Amazon and... Mm-hmm. Netflix and all that. I gotta think someone will pick it up. I hope. We have a few of them, but I'm not gonna buy every streaming service. Yeah.
Or like here in Canada, we can't get the DC one, so I can't see those shows.
You know? What?
I don't think so, or maybe we can.
Yeah, the DC shows are parceled out to like 5 different channels.
Oh, okay.
You just have to know what channels they're on without any advertising.
So what about the... does that include like the special new DC Direct, like Doom Patrol and that
stuff?
Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, Doom Patrol's on Space here.
Oh, okay. Oh, nice. Really? Huh.
Young Justice is on Teletoon.
Swamp Thing was another one they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't if the show hasn't ended though, it doesn't show up yet. Oh, okay. Usually.
Oh, okay.
And Swamp then, Thing's almost done. Teen Titans ended up on Netflix.
Teen Titans.
Is there a difference?
Well, yeah, there's no teen in the name. It's just
Titans. There isn't?
Nope. You mean the live action?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just called Titans.
Okay.
That's our Canadian...
We're having a spat.
Canadian TV content. This is your TV guide portion of the show.
Yeah, pretty much. You know what else is getting an Amazon series, apparently, is Paper Girls.
Oh, wow. I
never read that one.
I started and then just faded off. That this whole wave of nostalgia for the 80s has kind of left me, even though, obviously, reading comics, I think, fulfills my nostalgia quotient. Mm-hmm. Because it's set, right? It's set in the 80s. I only read maybe the first 4 issues or 5 issues. Oh, wait. TV show. Ooh, does that mean I can sell my comics and retire, Kevin?
They're already double at least cover price.
Whoa, look at that.
That's a title you recommend, Kevin? Like,
yeah. Salermo would tell you to definitely not read it.
Yeah.
It's crazy how... That's considered a hot book. Like, if it's worth double the cover price, it tells you the value of most of my sad comics. So, the second you drive them off the lot, they're like, likely not to see a return on them. But All right, that's boys.
Because the value is in the story, not in it's not a monetary value.
Oh, good God! Okay, thanks for the heartwarming.
I mean, tale about how the so anything you're probably reading for this show, like you're not buying some comic with scribbles in it that you can't tell what it is and hoping it's going to be $100 in the future. But it totally won't be.
That's the only reason I'm buying these things, Kevin. Hot investments. Walking Dead.
You're on the wrong show.
Walking Dead. Oh, remember last episode when I was like, oh, this would be a good, next issue would be a good jumping off point for me, and now all of a sudden it's gone?
Yeah. I guess that was kind of funny.
Did I wish it out of existence?
I love that he did it that way with like fake solicits and tricked everybody. Oh, that was great.
Unexpected, yeah.
And there's nothing more indie than just randomly canceling your title at whatever number you want.
Yeah, that was because I went down and made sure I bought the last few because normally we're trade reading. Mm-hmm. But I was like, oh, this way, because I'm way behind, but my wife is only like one trade behind. So I just thought, like, good on you, Kurt, when calling it. Because, you know, it's time for you to wrap that up and drop these comics and get back to TV shows.
That was kind of his last, you know, like a last of his good comics, you know, like I don't really see us enjoying too much of him coming forward, you know, if he does much.
I don't know. Depends if you enjoy Oblivion and all that stuff.
Yeah, no, I tried all that stuff, but like quite a few issues, but I just, everything since I haven't been able to get into.
Well, congratulations to Kirkman and the whole team. Boy, and Charlie Adler's got to be happy, right? I mean, as much as you love that, like, it's got to be nice to take a break. Like, he's been grinding on that book for a long time. Maybe now he wants to do something else.
It was a steady gig, right?
That's what I mean. Like, that paycheck was coming every month.
Yeah, but he must have been able to turn some of those original pages into some good cash, right?
Well, and he has the TV money. Isn't his name up there, too?
I don't remember. He wasn't
the original creator.
No, but I think now in the new seasons, I'm pretty sure his name's up there too.
I would also think that he was around in the creation of a lot of the characters on the show.
Oh, yeah, most of them.
So not, you know, not Rick and Carl and those, but any of the ones that came after issue 6, which is a lot of them because they kill off so many, I would imagine. I don't know, maybe it's just straight work for hire, but I would assume he is a part of that.
No, Robert Kirkman, I think, was really behind. Wasn't he behind of making the artists the creators, too?
I hope so.
I could be wrong, but
I'd be very sad if it turns out Charlie Adler's broke and penniless in 5 years and, like, it was a straight work-for-hire gig. That would be sad.
Well, it's Skybound, so they take some of your rights, don't they? Like, they're the anti-Image within Image?
Isn't all of them Top Cow and any of that like that? Like, if it's not your thing, it's theirs. But I thought he was on early enough.
I don't know.
The other thing I would say is, like, the original art pages for, like, the debut of Michonne and some of those had to have gotten a nice price, assuming he sold them. I mean, I do see some Walking Dead pages, so I don't know. Maybe those are other people selling them or, you know, pages he gave away or something. But I got to think that he was able to convert, plus, you know, signing fees and convention appearances and stuff. I would think that, I hope anyways, fingers crossed, that kind of long gig. And now he can go, you know, work on new stuff. I mean, do you really, I don't know. What's the longest you think, if it's not your entire property, what's the longest run in the modern times can you think of other than Adler on Walking Dead?
Savage Dragon.
Yeah, but he owns that, like, lock, stock. Yeah. Ain't nobody.
Oh, you mean someone that doesn't own the property.
Okay. Yeah, I was trying to think. Yeah. Like, that's a lot. Like, it's, what, 100 and, let's say, 85 issues, give or take? Mm-hmm. Plus, I don't know if there were specials or annuals or things like that that were mixed in here and there. Maybe those were with different creators.
There was that, like, the Michelin story, Negan, that kind of stuff.
So that's a good run of work for hire stuff. Unless, like I said, hopefully Kirk went. I mean, that'd be terrible if he's like, Yeah, we gave him $20 a page.
Well, after what happened with Moore, I don't know if he probably changed the arrangement, right, when Adlard came on. I have to imagine.
I don't know. I would think that what's it to him to do some kind, even the basic kind of like royalty thing like DC used to do. Because I've heard Perez talk about how his Teen Titans work is what allows him to retire comfortably. And it's not like DC is like the nicest, most generous. Warner Brothers isn't bending over backwards to give people a ton of money. So I feel like even some kind of minor little bump for other media use would be more than enough, considering how popular the show is. Although Daryl being the most popular character, and he, I don't think, was in the comics, so it's kind of sad for them. But I know back when I watched that show, there were a lot of things from the comics. Like, maybe not the exact, but a lot of them characters came from the comics. Mm-hmm. I mean, the governor was in it, Negan.
Oh, every character shows up, like, up to this point, pretty much.
I feel like...
they're just not used right sometimes. Or, like, the Preacher show, for example, they pop all their characters in the first season, like they just blew their load at once, you know, kind of thing. So it made kind of no sense. It was dumb.
So great.
And then they went on the journey.
So I went from happy about Adler to now depressed. Thanks, Kevin. Yeah. Now I'm bummed ripped off and ruined.
Well, maybe we should move on to like Old Guard or Lazarus or something. Some of those people are getting compensated, and if they're not, you know, Ruck is like, I'll change some of the arrangements here so you guys are getting more money too. So I'm like, that's nice.
Yeah, if it just seems like that they can, especially if you're able to generate a lot more as the writer.
Mm-hmm.
I know this links into what Kevin and I were talking about on Marvel Noise about how I feel like sometimes the writers are actually almost overextended with the number of properties they're involved in. But it lets them have a lot more shots at the apple of having one of these things.
Well, it's easier to write a script than draw a page, right?
Oh, for sure. I don't know if
it's easier, but it takes less time.
Oh, it's definitely easier.
I've never seen the writers have to retire because their eyesight and backs and have gone.
And I would say one script is the same amount of work as one page of artwork.
Yeah, I just can't imagine how. I think the physical toll.
You know, I don't want to equate like time with like effort or something. It's like someone that goes to the bookstore and they take the thickest book, and then they don't, and then they get fewer pages, well, and they're
it's not about
and
that.
They were just going by. It's like some weird thing, like. It's like, drawing comics, $20, but only 20 pages. Well, that's not worth my time or something, but what if it's the best comic? Like, it's one of those weird, you can't equate.
Yeah, you can. I agree with Phil. Drawing is way harder. Like, it's physically demanding. We've seen so many of these old guys, their eyes get shot and their hands, and they develop arthritis and all these physical ailments that maybe, I guess, if you wrote millions of pages, you'd get the same arthritis or something, but I feel like it's physically a more demanding task.
And they'll write, like, they could write scripts in, like, half a day or one day, you know, or, like, less than a day.
You just do one paragraph, and the computer writes the rest, and then you just hand it to the artist.
I mean, maybe you want to take a long time, and that's fine. I'm not saying you can't take as long as you want, but I don't see how you can equate the physical effort of writers and artists. I mean, we've just seen all these. Go look at the Hero Initiative. All the artists that have just been physically ground down because they've been bent over that drawing board for 12 hours a day, 6 days a week for 50 years.
That's the difference
hashtag
between physical labor and mental labor, I guess.
Yeah, hashtag Kevin doesn't care about artists. I agree.
We already settled that when we got into the whole writer versus artist debate, and then I was all like, screw you, artist. Do you remember that controversial episode? Where, like, yeah, the artist gets screwed over when they say, like, oh, Brian K. Vaughan's Paper Girls is going to screen or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, I guess there was no artist on that book. But, like, I totally get that. But then you get into the other thing where, like, oh, the artist is 90% of that book because he did the fashion designing and all this stuff. And I'm just like, you know, I'm like 60-40 or 50-50. Or if you don't have one of those guys, you don't have a comic. But all right. Then, you know, there's always there's certain arguments that you always see come around again, and it's always the artist is more important argument.
Well, you see artists do their own comic. They write it and draw it, but writers you don't see do that because they suck.
No, but, and then everyone pretends that the artist is just as good at writing as he is at drawing, and I'm like, that is often not the case.
I don't necessarily believe that, because there's a lot of awesome indie comics that are done by just one guy.
I know. Like, you get one Frank Miller or whatever, and then, like, people are like, all artists are done by one guy.
Yeah, I don't think Frank Miller was a good example of an artist.
He's a great example.
I've never been a fan of him or Alan Moore, really.
Oh, my God. This is where... Good thing we had the warning at the beginning of the show.
I like that we're getting into it. Oh my God, I hated 300. I thought it was terrible.
Yeah.
It's that worst kind of, like, the people, the mysterious creatures from the East. It's that exoticism of Asians.
That's an unstoppable war machine. I'm like, yeah, that's totally what you don't want. You know, that bad representation.
I find Batman Year One is boring as all shit. I like the art, though.
Yeah, I gotta say, Mazzucchelli is pretty killer, man.
But the book
that Mazzucchelli did later, and people were falling all over themselves that they loved, and I'm like, that wasn't that good.
Persephone. Yes.
I never heard of that one.
No.
And all those books like that, I was just like,
I like that. Kids,
I'm just like, there was also 10, guys. I'm like, I don't know.
Was he Asterios?
I can't get into those books.
Asterios Polyp too. Was that him? Okay. Yeah, I like that one. Was a good, yeah. The Persepolis was the Marjorie Satrap or whatever, but the Asterios Paul. Yeah, I thought that was a good book.
I mean,
book
of the year, and it's like I don't. This is totally off for this, but you know, it's another one of those things. I'm like, I can only go so far.
I mean, when I was a kid, I did like Dark Knight, but now when I read it, I'm like, oh man.
Really?
This should be read by children. No wonder it was...
Wow.
No wonder it was good for that age. Yeah. But, I don't know. Some of the old stuff is good, I guess. You don't find, like, the Karen Page...
Well, you know that you hate Golden Age comics, Andrew.
...doing, like, shamed into the whole... Like, you don't think that felt way over the top?
The
Karen Page, his treatment of Karen Page. You didn't feel that was like overly dramatic and over the top silliness?
Not really. No, what I find overly dramatic is someone turns into a werewolf, kills their father, gets hyped up on cocaine, then gets hunted by sentinels. It's like all that in like a few issues. That's overly dramatic.
Whoa. All right. That's an excellent segue to How to Be a Werewolf. The webcomic. I think we now know how Kevin feels about it. Phil, did you happen to check it out?
I read up to like 11 pages about when it was black and white still.
Nice. And it's on howtobeawerewolf.com. I'll drop that in the show notes. I came across this because I was on the Twitter machine, and Bert Wieners, former podcaster and all-around fun guy, had retweeted the creator's work, and I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. The creator, I guess, was having a birthday, and she was like, hey, check out my comic. And I was like, I will, because I used to read more, but I kind of fall off. Like, if I find one, I'll jump on it and read it, and then I'll kind of forget that it exists.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's happened to you guys.
It's just because the way you read it, right? Like, if it's not like we have the physical, you know, to remind us to keep reading it. Like, it's just on your phone or whatnot.
True.
When I worked in an office and there was someone that would read them every day, it was sort of like a mental reminder to, like, hey, check out that webcomic. Like,
if you put it on your desktop, maybe.
Yeah. But then after, like, that, you don't have that type of thing. It's like, I it fell away.
Yeah, I just feel bad about that. I guess that's the point of those readers and feeders and all that.
Collected too. Like, that's how I end up reading a lot of the webcomics, is I buy the trades.
Well, I also have piles of unread trades, so I guess you could you could say I'm a bad guy for that.
Like, does she do physical for her comic?
I don't know anything. My whole world involved with it was just seeing the tweet where I was like, oh, this is kind of interesting. And then just, it was at a time where I had a pocket of time. So I just ripped through it. And I was like, I think the pacing is
450 pages so far.
Yeah, it could be a collected one.
Chapters, Andrew.
Yeah, wow. Surprising how much you tore into it to start this segment. Mm-hmm. Surprised you lasted that long on it. But I enjoyed it. Kevin, what were your thoughts in a more detailed way? It's the story of our protagonist was bit when she was very young.
I like those pages. I flipped a bit ahead. Her
origin story?
It's drawn. Yeah, the way it's drawn, the different art.
And
you can sort of see things evolving. Because there's a spot where, there's not even, tails on balloons. Or it's, in black and white, and all of a sudden, color starts becoming more and more, part of the story and everything.
Yeah, I thought all of that stuff was well executed. So and that's kind of the fun thing too about reading something that literally was years in the making, is you see the changes.
Yeah.
So anyway, she was bit as a young girl and is kind of alone and works at the family coffee shop and kind of keeps to herself mostly because of her fear of losing control. And then another werewolf comes to town and finds her. But I thought they parse out kind of the rules of the world and how werewolves and witches and all that work is well mixed with the story and character development and action. Like, it's not all, they have to dump this information, but I never felt overly burdened by the info dumps.
Are the witches against the werewolves kind of thing?
There's a bunch of them, but it never felt like, oh, here's where we're going to have to sit through pages of exposition time.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed the artwork. And yeah, I'll put a link in the thing. I just thought it was a fun, I'm like, oh, if you boys want, we'll all have, it's nice sometimes to have something we've all read together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely do like the artwork and the coloring too in the later pages. I don't know enough about the story from what I've read, but
I mean, it's building a mythology like a Buffy the Vampire Slayer or something like that, I feel like.
Is there any comedy in it?
Very little. I would say there's some light heart, but it's not really funny. It's just more, like I said, I feel the balance between developing these characters, the introduction of new characters, having some action, learning about the world. I think it's meted at a good pace for me anyways.
I kind of feel like the coffee shop, like at first you're just like, oh, that's an angry customer. And then it happens again and again. And I'm like, you could find humor from, oh, here, it's the repetition gag, right?
Yeah. And also, that's pretty, my limited time in the retail world certainly taught me to believe that there are some regular customers. Just because someone's a regular customer doesn't mean it's a regularly pleasant experience. But I wanted to shout out. Yeah, so I would like to find more. The other thing I find fascinating about webcomics is, because I'm not in that world, for all I know, this comic is read by 50 million people. the creator showed up somewhere,
450 pages, it must be doing well.
Like you never know, or it could be read by
the production has gone up
by a small group of people. Like that's the funny thing. Like there are these huge properties out there that have massive, massive millions of people from around the world, and you never know if am I tapping into something or if it's just, it's good and it deserves it. I just like the mysterious, where I feel like with print comics, we know when something gets big, like they let you know, although Big for Print, I feel, is a lot smaller than Big for Internet, because obviously, you know, if you sell like 50,000 comics, you're going to be a big wheel, but I bet you a lot of web comics have, like I said, views in the millions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, for sure, because there's a lot of people that don't want to pay, you know, and this is a great way for them to get good comics, right?
And I love when I find it like this, like it was started years ago. So there's this huge backlog of me, and I can just sit and devour it up. What will probably happen is I'll forget for a while. Yeah. And then it'll be nice because I can go back to it and be like, oh, there's a whole bunch of pages. Mm-hmm. But I did the Warren Ellis had a few Freak Angels, right? And I think.
Yeah, I have all those. And I really enjoyed the Crossed web series. It was way better than all the other Cross stuff.
So I feel like it's a whole fun world. And every time I discover it, I'm always pleased and dive in. And then I'll sure forget about it. And then a year from now, I'll dive into a whole bunch of new webcomics. So glad to see. Well, I feel like that digital initiative attempts, like Monkey Brain and Mark Waid's one and all that, were hot, and then are they still around?
They just disappeared. Yeah.
Monkey Brain isn't, because they thought that the digital expansion would just continue going and people would, like, I guess it, for that to continue along that, you see a chart with, I only see things going up, like, people would literally have to have abandoned paper, and like most would have to be digital, and digital just, you know, it didn't increase like that.
Because so, I think we covered also the Mark Waid ones. It was the one about the guy that taught in prison and was being corrupted.
I don't remember that one.
Well, yeah, wasn't it like Eighth Seal or something?
Yeah, and we covered all those.
No, Eighth Seal was a different one.
But it was a really...
That was still the same...
Oh, same company?
Digital thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I just feel we saw that huge flood of and then I just don't hear... And for all I know, they're still going strong. Yeah. I just don't hear about them like I used to.
Yeah, because I don't think... That's weird. Like, you see webcomics, like, millions of views or something, but that's, like, a webcomics crowd. It's weird that they all have all these different segments. Like, you've talked about this before. Like, there's a cartoonist convention and a comic convention, and there's all these weird segmented things. And, like, you could try to do webcomics, but you won't necessarily capture the webcomics crowd if you were, a mainstream comic guy. Like, it's weird.
It is. It's funny how the long tail of the internet makes all these arbitrary distinctions between who's doing what type of book or whatever. It is funny. But...
Yeah, or then you're selling in like a million copies from a Scholastic, but comics is like, comics are bad.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. Yeah, those Diary of a Wimpy Kid and the Raina Telgemeier and all those people who are like, yeah, like every kid has a copy of one of those books.
And I'm like, that's great.
But yeah, it makes me laugh. But I wanted to loop around, boys, if you'll indulge me in another SDCC story. I was I'm going through my books, giving a bunch away, as I said, and selling some, and just downsizing because some of these I'm never going to read again. So I was going through a stack of books I bought at shows, and I don't know if you guys remember the Arcana publisher. They're still around.
Yep.
But I had picked up a copy of The Intrinsic number 2, and sometimes I check online to see, like, hey, you know, is there a movie, or just out of curiosity, like, what happened? Mm-hmm. And I could not find a single reference to the single issue number 2. Like, it's on the collection and digital and all that. So I asked Comic Spectrum, Bob Breital, who I give a lot of my books. I'm like, Bob, can you find any word of this? I don't know. He couldn't find anything, so he looped in the publisher. This is on Twitter. And the publisher's like, oh, it came out in single issues, but, like, My Comic Shop, Mile High, Comic DB, none of these places show it as a single issue. But they swear that 2, 3, and 4 are flops. So I feel like I have this weird kind of unicorn comic, and I'm like, I wonder if I can find the floppy of 3 and 4. Because it's so weird that, I mean, not that I expect errors on some of those websites, but to have no reference on any of them, it was just one of those fascinating, like, this is now like a cool comic that I really like.
Now the hunt is on.
Now the hunt is on. I mean, they said that it came out, but I don't know. Like, none of those websites that track this stuff have it. But they all show the trade.
If it did, right?
Right. I don't know that. So. Yeah. Maybe it was just whatever they printed. But that was funny. I was like, whoa, I have a rare comic that doesn't exist anywhere on the internet. From Arcana. Like, not a huge publisher, but not small. I mean, you know, they do shows. And
they've been around a while.
Yeah, and they've had some media tie-in stuff, too. The last thing was that Kids Lovecraft, like, animated show and comic. It was like a young Howard Lovecraft having adventures.
Do they not do the Jim Henson stuff, too?
That's Arkea.
Oh, okay, okay.
And they got bought by Boom, I believe. Mm. This is Arcana, who never was a big one, but they always had a thing, and I think they've also might have moved off floppies a lot. It looks like, from what I can see, it's a lot of Comixology and digital sales now.
Yeah, I know I've gotten like some of their floppies in the dollar bins usually.
Wow. I don't know if
that says much, but that's usually where I'd find stuff from them.
Yeah. That's when Andrew gets depressed, because he's like, I paid full price for these.
Exactly. Yeah. All my comics in the dollar bin.
Or then I'm just real happy. Like, I picked up 4 issues of Rocketeer, that Hollywood Horror, all for, like, for $1 each in the bin. And I'm like, all right, I'm happy.
Mm-hmm. I guess I should be happy that someone can still sell those for anything at this point. As a guy who's having a lot of issues selling stuff, I should be happy about that at least.
I can't see a lot of indie comics, like, people going, you know, like, I want this. Like, some obscure, like, unknown. If you're getting rid of stuff like that, like, you know. All right. It's not the TMNT 95 of the week.
All right, boys. I don't want to dominate this thing. Do you guys have any books you want to talk about?
I do have some books.
Well, lay it on us.
Yeah.
I
mean...
I was, like, silently making jokes to myself. Remember that episode? Anyhows, we better get this Black Hammer Justice League.
Now, I haven't read this yet. Which Justice League members are in it?
Hammer of Justice, number one.
I'll
mention the writer and the artist. Jeff Lemire and Michael Walsh. Good Canadian boys.
Oh, that's why you guys have to read it. I forgot the minimum Canadian content laws up there.
I don't get why he didn't do Justice Society, though. Like, why Justice League?
Because the characters are sort of like Justice League?
Oh, yeah.
Justice League has bigger name recognition, so you're going to get more sales.
Yeah, I can't... If Dark Horse is approaching DC, and they're like, yeah, we want Detective Chimp, Zatanna, it's like, that's not going to go over as well. Random obscure characters or semi-obscure.
I think it'd go better because it goes well with Black Hammer.
Yeah, but you want to, like, Barb Alien to meet Martian Manhunter, don't you?
Though? Why not? I'd also like him to meet maybe Jay Garrick or something.
Right.
You want their analogs to meet.
No, that's been done so many times, that kind of stuff.
They're also trying to get those,
don't read this,
those DC fans to buy the book. And I think, believe me, if Detective Chimp could support a solo series, he'd have one. So they want the ones that are, you know, your big fans.
He's in a lot of team books, so he does a good job.
I'd be there reading those Slam Bradley comics by Brubaker. You know, I'd do that.
Well, you two would be the two people buying them, so I don't think DC is going to...
I don't know who Slam Bradley is.
Exactly my point. yeah, don't market to me. If we've learned anything this episode, don't market to me.
All right, so how many issues of this thing has come out?
One issue.
Oh, it is a mini?
Yeah, it's a mini, but what's weird... is I think Age of Doom was supposed to conclude at issue 12, and then this was supposed to come out, like, after.
Oh, so it's canon too. Nice.
Yeah, so because in issue 11, you know, everyone's coming together and like we're getting towards a conclusion and Anti-God is there and all that crazy stuff is going on. Like they're all like, ah, oh, we're all ready for the final battle. And then you read like the letters page and it's just like, yeah, issue 12 will be out. And then you can read Black Hammer Justice League. And I'm like, oh, the title's late. So I,
but I doubt it makes a big deal.
Needless to say, I read this. I didn't see any obvious spoilers for issue 12. Like maybe after I read issue 12, I'll be like, oh, that's why that was like that. But I can't
well,
tell.
Was there any characters missing?
No.
Here's where Phil wheedles out spoilers Kevin didn't see.
Yeah. I'm using my detective chip alert from him.
I mean, it's, it could, see, this is the weird thing. It could take place in the past, or like after issue 12, they could be back on the farm, and I can't figure that out right now because I didn't read issue 12, right? Because they're on the farm in this.
Yeah.
So
I must
know.
Not be canon. I bet you like it's just a throwaway story then.
No, he said he didn't want to do a story that's like meaningless. So this is supposed to have an effect.
You should have done that stupid hockey story then, eh?
So anyways, you have they do a lot of setup. Like they're like back on the farm. He has to introduce all these characters to the DC readers, I guess. I don't know how many DC readers are going to be interesting to see what the sales are on.
Yeah, I doubt there's a lot of crossover.
And then it's funny, when you see the characters on the cover, it's like Wonder Woman, Superman, Cyborg, and then way in the back is Batman. I'm like, Cyborg trumps Batman, apparently.
No, it's because Batman hides in the shadows. He lurks in the back.
No, it's because Cyborg's one of the most critical members and most popular, important members of the Justice League. He's been there since the 40s.
Man, have I never been as tempted to not click the continue recording button.
Wow. No, that's like Marvel trying to make Inhumans happen is DC trying to make Cyborg happen in the Justice League. Like, there's not a better example than that. But anyways, we're on the farm, and then, like, the cosmic MacGuffin shows up, I assume. Who knows, really, right? And then that's when the story switches over to the Justice League, and they're fighting Starro. Love some Starro. And if this is one of those things, though, you have like some kind of crossover team up thing, the characters don't meet in the first issue.
Oh, really?
Oh.
And I remember Phil bringing this up, I think, before about some other crossover event. But they do this kind of. I won't spoil it, but they do something that's clever, so it's still cool. I'm like, oh, yeah, I want to see that. But still, the characters never meet up. I'm sure they will, because that's part of the point of you want to see people meet their analogs and everything. And I find Walsh is a good fit. Like, the characters seem like the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And some of their, like, I guess with Gale, like, that's the one where I noticed, like, his style coming through, but his style is still close enough to the regular book. Like, it's not like they got some totally different artist. Like, it's still within that realm, so he fits into that world, and you're not off-put by, hey, everything looks really weird now and super photorealistic or something, you know, like, just totally different. Like, there were those issues with fill-in artists, but it wasn't with the full cast. So it still kept the whole tone of the series. And that was like the weird collective consciousness issues of Black Hammer, where it was like real bizarre stuff was happening. And you saw like craters in the clouds, and that was weird. Mm-hmm. But then it looped back into the main cast, and then the regular artist was back. So, I mean, the whole, it keeps everything like, like a continuity between art styles going anyways, which is nice. And there's one real freakish moment where Barb Alien is transforming, and I'm just like, ooh, Like, it looks like he's twisting his neck off. Like, I never thought about how he changes. I don't think you usually see.
No, I don't remember ever seeing.
But they're like, oh, there's some person coming by. Like, you got to switch. So then he's mm-hmm. his jaw is, like, being ripped off his head and all this stuff while he's transforming into his other form. And I'm oh, like, shoot.
So it's like a horror movie change?
Yeah,
like
yeah. Kinda. So I'm looking forward to where we're going. And there's, like, no letters page or anything in the back. I don't know if there will be. And then there's, like, a DC ad, a Dark Horse ad. And then you get Colonel Weird and the Flash as your back cover.
All right, and that ends our Black Hammer cover.
And Andrew still hates Black Hammer. And Canadian writers.
I forgot to put in my no Black Hammer rules for this episode. Dang it, Kevin tricked me. He got one under the wire. Dog.
Well, I'll let it pass because we got to talk about DC a bit.
Well, Andrew does that every episode anyways. He's always looking for an excuse.
I am. I'm no good that way. But, Phil, do you have anything you want to bring up before the class?
No. I think because we talked about all that stuff so much, I'll just... Because I just kind of reread stuff I've talked about before, like Rick and Morty or Fearless Dawn, and I forget what the other one was called, but yeah, it was all kind of stuff I covered before. I've been rereading a lot of old stuff. Like, I haven't been collecting as many floppies.
Nice.
Just because still trying to push to just trades, you know?
Oh, I don't blame you. Tempting, but I...
It's hard, though. It's really hard.
Continuing my Comic-Con coverage, mm-hmm. I'm going to talk about Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, number 50 from Claypool Comics.
Yeah, see, I never knew there was an old series because I've been reading a bit of the new series, but yeah, I never knew they had
quite a while. This was back in 1997, and this is their send-up of San Diego Comic-Con.
Oh, wow.
Kurt Busiek, Neil Vokes, Louis LaChance, Richard Howell, mm-hmm. Kevin Cunningham. Yeah, and so it's funny to hear them. So it's called Don Diego Con, and Elvira's on her way there. And it's cute. It kind of reminds me of Mad Magazine a little bit. And this mm-hmm. issue, it's the only one I have of the comic. So, but it's kind of a recap in some way. She finds characters from previous episodes. But it's so funny that in 1997, they're roasting Comic-Con for being, like, not about comics and too Hollywood.
Really?
And I'm like, man, if they could see 97, they think it's a problem. Like,
wow.
97, you could still buy tickets to the show at the show. Like, mm-hmm. I feel... So just funny about how, like, Artist Alley is shrinking and there's some hustler publisher that shows up and explodes because they're just trying to do media tie-ins and they don't have any substance. Like, all the critics...
It's like they're predicting the future.
Yeah, but 97, this thing came out, like, slow down, boys. Like,
I don't even know if I knew cons existed then, really.
Yeah. Do they have any comics left at San Diego right now if this is 1997?
Yeah, I know. So I feel like it's pretty ridiculous in general, but... You know, Elvira, her big appeal is obviously they draw her as a very curvy, with a big busty reveal.
I was a big fan of her growing up. Yeah. I still watch her once in a while.
And then they have a little backup feature in the back as well. It's kind of funny. And it's about the different holidays that she goes to. But the Comic-Con send-up. And I really like the artwork. It's, like I said, it's kind of a cute little almost Mad Max. But they make her a little bit... Kind of Mad Magazine meets Bratz a little bit. Like, their heads do seem a little bigger than they should be, but mm-hmm. certainly their chests are bigger than they need to be, I think. But yeah, I just love all the send-up of it. And the other thing I enjoyed was her fan club was up the street, across from where Earth 2 Comics has their main store in this. Mm-hmm. And now it's a strip mall. I think back then it was still a strip mall with, like, pizza places and ramen and all that. And I love that, like, Elvira's little fan club was just a couple miles up the road from me. I do not think they are still there. But I love the old days when you could write in. You know, you would join it. You know, this is the late 90s. You were still... Send in mail in, and they have, you can get a subscription.
To it, you can also pick up back issues directly from the company, which I love when that was a thing that indie publishers would do when they had overprint runs. But yeah, her fan club was at 15030 Ventrilo Boulevard, number 1-710 Sherman Oaks.
You just dox them.
Well, it's in their comic book, so I think it's fine for them. But, I mean, they are on the internet, so you could send us via email, all in capital letters, at claypool@sonic.net. Don't delay, don't think twice, don't kill a tree. Oh, the 90s, when we were all... The bright future was so... You know, the internet was going to save us all.
Yep.
But, yeah, she's, you know... and she has little news about where she's appearing, about how she's coming back to Knott's Berry Farm, where she's been doing that show. I think she just did her last one last year, so she was there forever, and all her little movie appearances, and toys, and tie-ins, and the first set of Elvira trading cards came out, so they're, and they did so well, they're going to make a second series. Kevin, do you have all those, I assume?
No.
And the Jay Hoffert Company will release a line of Elvira Halloween lights. But remember, updates on Elvira's burgeoning media saturation can be gotten at the Elvira website, but they don't provide the citation. What? They just say at the website, and I'm like, well, I guess if you're a fan, you already know where to get the website. But yeah, so yeah, Comic-Con, it was over in 97, boys. It was way too Busiek, yep. And them were just roasting how what a sellout show it was. Good God. They had no idea. No idea.
No idea.
I mean, there's still
did they?
Loads of Comic-Con publishing, but I do feel like, slow down, boys. It's 97. Like, you, there's more to come.
And, I need to blow through some stuff, Andrew.
Okay, go ahead. Wait, how much Black Hammer related material is this?
None.
Like 47 minis that you need to get off your chest?
Yeah, 4 issues.
Okay, give it to us.
I got Sobek by James Stokoe that has a foil cover, heavy paper stock.
We are now the Stokoe cat. Sorry, Tom, you've been replaced by by James. Go on.
It's about this, like, crocodile alligator type of dude that's sort of god. Like, I was thinking a bit like Khonshu and Moon Knight, and I don't know why.
Isn't that a real, based on a real character? Because DC had that same character.
Possibly.
Yeah.
I'm not up on all the Egyptian mythology and all that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's a real...
Well, why aren't you, Kevin? Can't prepare for the show.
Why am I not? Yeah. Why am I not Batman?
You don't have the strength.
Crazily detailed. So awesome. So these guys in here from Egypt are like going to like his temple. Mm-hmm. And because they need help. Because there's some situation going down where another god has just set up shop in their village, and like evil sort of like reeks from the soil, from the surface. So, but what's funny is you know Man-Thing and Thunderbolts, Andrew?
Yes.
When he started talking to Boomerang and all that, and he's just like, "What's up?" That's the personality of Sobek here, where he's just like, "Yo guys, what's happening?" Which begins his sort of misadventure to help these people out. Because eventually they, you know, get him off his perch there, and he wanders down the Nile, takes a few naps, but eventually he gets to where he needs to go, and, you know, a fight happens. And while he saves his people, he destroys like half of their city in the process. It's pretty humorous, but awesome to look at. So awesome. Poor people, though. And then we have, I think I promised this one, New Ecology by Jesse Jacobs and James Kilpatrick. It's a little small, like, I guess maybe like a postcard-sized, like, stapled mini-comic.
Mm-hmm.
With, like, thick pages. And this is supposed to be based on, I guess, a showing at an art gallery and some other art. And he added, like, and he sort of came up with a story based around the artwork. So this is where a new ecology is introduced into Earth. And just like the other book I talked about that was sort of like a sci-fi type of thing, this is all like narration. Like basically four panels per page. And it just goes into like some crazy thing that happened where it's like, oh, yeah, we found out about this new stuff that was on Earth. And then we checked it out and we made drugs out of it and everything. But then we found like us talking, like all the noise made it grow and it's going to take over the Earth. So it's like what people do, what happens in this new crazy world. Like so much story is compressed into like a few pages.
So like tiny comics.
This is another thing where you could have a whole Image comic series just based on this one thing, which is nuts. But that's what he does. Then I have Metal Shark Bro, which is by Walter Ostly and Bob France and Kevin Cuffey. I hope it's E. Maybe there's only Cuff. I don't know. I'm like Andrew now. Pronunciation of names is not my strong suit.
Hey, at least you're trying.
So have you ever wanted to see like a Ghost Rider type of scenario combined with a shark?
No.
Like, nope.
Then we're done. Andrew.
I'm not really that into sharks. I know it's weird. There's shark TV shows and movies. They were never my jam. I mean, I don't have any beef with them. They're just not my thing. But there have been lots of comics about them. I think there was a Hook Jaw from 2000 AD to link into our last episode. Yeah. It was a big one. And the Jaws movies and Meg, wasn't that a way? The Meg or whatever that.
Meg, yeah.
Megalodon or, yeah, so it's a big thing.
Oh, that's why it's called Meg. Okay.
Yeah, you guys are, I'm in the minority here. It's just not something sharks aren't interesting to me.
I guess people are into predators, right?
Oh, well, I mean, they made so many of those movies that now I think you're going
to
find people hard to get as excited now that they're on their 40th movie. But yeah, I mean, sharks are a thing. Like they're in all media. They're just not my bag.
So these bros are just hanging out and one of them falls into the water. And so the shark just eats them. So then this guy shows up like, you know, like Mephisto showing up. And it's like, whoa, you killed that person, blah, 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 blah. And so the shark sort of strikes a deal with this, like with the Mephisto-like guy. And he becomes like a shark bro, like the guy as a shark. So mm-hmm. that if he does enough things that the devil wants, he'll be able to go back to living as a shark rather than a person.
You know where this comic loses me, though, is just having the word bro.
Yeah, it doesn't do much for me either. Yeah. I'm not that into bros or sharks, I guess. So
well, that's because he eats a bro and he becomes a bro. So he's not just a shark, he's a shark bro.
Yeah, again, if we're not interested in either element, putting them together isn't.
Well, what's weird on the cover, he's like playing this guitar and everything, and I'm like, that never really plays into the comic. And what do you think? Like, that's a basic story. Like, he's just trying to do things and get back to where he was, and there's some ninja nuns.
Of course, ninja nuns.
Yeah.
That's been used a lot, actually, ninja nuns.
Yeah, I feel like, wasn't that Archer and Armstrong? Had the whole
That's what I thought about. But anyways, Andrew, what do you think about this model where you put out the first issue? See, this is by Scout Comics, and it's part of their Binge line.
So I've seen some Scout books before. Yeah. I've bought some, yeah.
So they put out the first issue as a single issue, and this is the only issue, but it's a 4-issue limited series. So you're supposed to buy the first issue, see if you like it, then when the trade comes out in 3 months, buy the trade.
That's
there's no more issues.
That's like the weird. That's what I thought was with that Arcana book, The Intrinsic. Like, yeah. I couldn't find two, three, and four. There's lots of references to one in print, but I couldn't find any references, and that's what they were doing. I think that's a popular model, because I think they realize that there's just, with a four-issue limited series, you're asking the comic shops to pretty much, because of the pre-order, they got to order, what, the first three, like, sight unseen? Yeah. So, I think it's a model maybe due to how the ordering works. Because I think if they didn't have to make the people order that far, because how many shops are really going to order huge on not just one? I mean, I can see one, but they're going to order a ton of two and three and hope that not only the first ones sell, but they're so popular people keep buying two and three.
Like, I guess technically the Shark Bro is in a metal band, so he's Metal Shark Bro. But anyhow, I had to look up the price of the trade paperback, because if it's the price of four issues, then I'd be like, I don't know. Like, the company kind of has to eat the cost of one issue for it to be, like, if you're buying the trade and you already have the first issue, you want the trade to be the price of three issues.
Making the first issue cheap enough.
Yeah.
Because that also helps.
Making the trade paperback cheap enough, because otherwise I might be like, I don't want to buy, like, pay money for an issue I already have.
But how many times have you done that for Marvel?
Yeah, but Kevin can flip those for big money. Oh, jeez. So it doesn't make a difference. But I think you're right, Phil. It's better to make the first issue cheaper, because that also means that more comic shops might take a chance on it as well, because if it's expensive. And they might be able to pack some, like, special goodies into the trade to make it more than just four-ish. You know what I mean? Put some behind the scenes.
Well, instead, they should have just done a five-issue story and have that first issue just be original, you know, and then packed in the trade also.
Mm. So, well, they must have went with my marketing genius or ungenius, because the first issue is $3.99, and then the trade is the price of three issues.
Well, there you go. I don't know. Maybe they can't get it under three, or maybe they're just worried that they can't take too much of a bath because there's not enough sell through. It'll hurt them. Or maybe also the other thing is maybe the difference between $3.99 and $3.25 isn't enough to move people to. You know what I mean? Maybe comic shops. I can see if it was a dollar, but I don't know if having it just be, say, 75 cents cheaper would move more orders or not. I don't know. Never ordered a. Sometimes I ask my comic shop guy how things are selling, but that's only one guy, and who knows what he's telling me, if it's anything.
I can sort of guess.
But I've seen Scout.
I don't need to ask anyone about how Valiant is selling.
Well, that's because...
Scout, I don't think I know that company.
That's because you're selling them, Kevin. That's because you're Canada's Mile High. So, you know, you're buying and selling books by the metric ton, so... I mean, you just one word from you, and you probably move the market on your own. In fact, why don't you tell us ahead of time? Yeah, why don't you give us the alert, Kevin?
I think I'm better at that. I'm the one that ended Walking Dead.
Well, I'm just saying.
Everyone go out and buy Agents of Atlas. Kevin, you didn't?
Kevin could give us the heads up ahead of time, Phil, before he makes a public move, and then he makes his move, and then we all reap the whirlwind of the benefits.
Yeah.
Just saying,
it takes 10 years to happen, though.
Was that your? Do you have more on your short stack, Kevin?
I think he had one left, didn't he?
Yeah, I don't know if you got. If this is a long segment. I have a Nightmare comic. I think I sent you guys the link, but you guys were probably like, Nightmare.
No, I don't remember a Nightmare one.
I don't remember the link either.
Yeah.
Oh, of course you don't.
Well, you know, I'm not saying you didn't send it.
I'm saying
because we were supposed to record and then we didn't record, so everyone's just like, I don't remember that stuff.
Yeah, two of us don't remember to one remembering, Kevin. Yeah. So.
It was totally there.
Sure it was, Kevin. Sure.
It was dreamt. Jeez. This thunderstorm is throwing me off. You know, as soon as I started talking about Metal Shark Bro, it started thundering and lightning.
Oh, you have a thunderstorm?
And I'm like, that's kind of strange. It's hot right now.
I bet you it's hotter down here.
We got your balls are sweaty.
We got a couple. Well, that's pretty much a guarantee. Not like you're reaching out. So do you wanna send us the link, Kevin, and have us read it, and we can all join in?
Yeah. Why don't we do that?
You want me to open the email, dig up the link?
Yeah. Well, or just send us a new one, or send it to us the first time.
Guys. Vamper time.
Well, I do have. I wanted to say, I don't know if you guys saw from Ahoy Comics the Steel Cage book. I thought that was a funny idea.
Usually I look at their books, yeah.
That was the one with three small comics in it. Okay. And you vote. You go on their website and vote for which one to continue. Yeah, so it was...
What were they?
Well, I voted for True Identity, Tom Payer, Alan Robinson, Lee Loughridge. That was basically your... That's the first one in there. And basically it's your alien... We think he's like a Superman type analog, but and he has all these wonderful powers. But the truth is, he's from far away in the future, and he's considered primitive back then.
Oh, okay.
So they send him back to our time where he's super advanced, and he doesn't feel he's up to it. I mean, all these are like solid, well done.
Mm-hmm. Books. Where are the other two? Because I'm very curious right now.
Bright Boy, Stuart Moore, Peter Gross, Giuliani Brusco, or. Julia Brusco. And that one is he is like the smartest guy, and he's sent in to, there's like a catastrophe, and he has to try and undermine it, and then at the end it kind of fails to go through. And this one left me a little bit, and then it has a twist at the end that I'm not going to reveal. But that one, and also when I looked at the voting, that one had the fewest votes. And then the one that had the most votes, which I didn't vote for, was the Noah Zark, Mark Waid, Lana Suvani. And that's like this little kid, and he is a space traveler, and he kind of runs around and saves animals from different alien planets.
I think you definitely picked the most interesting one out of them all, for sure.
I mean, it's well done, but it's a little cutesy. I mean, I'm sure it's done... with that intent. And not that I don't read...
It'd be too cutesy, right? Yeah.
Not that I don't read cutesy books, but I just felt like, oh, out of all those... And also, this has come up before. I'm generally not a fan of, like, little kid being the star of the book, too.
No, or, like, school stuff. I can't take school stuff anymore. Yeah,
I mean, sometimes it works, but I'm just... Generally, a little kid is not as the lead. You know, they, like... And a children shall lead them type of thing. But the whole point of that one is he doesn't know. He's from Earth, but they don't know where that is. So he just goes around and rescues all these little different alien creatures and tries to help them out. I mean, he seems like a good kid. And the artwork is, you know, colorful and lush. It just isn't, like I said, the old Superman analog thing seemed more my bag.
Well, it seems like you can do more character development with that type of story, right?
Yeah. But I thought that was a fun, like, we get to go on, and especially with a website. Like,
I like that a lot because I liked it when Robert Kirkman did a pilot series for Top Cow. Remember he put out a bunch of
And you had to vote? Yeah, so that was this one. And I'm like, because we no longer have to send in, you know, you don't have people mail ballots in or however they used to do it. It's a good way to get a lot of people to do it. The other thing I wondered was, I wonder if they count the number of comics sold and count the votes. Because if I was like, this guy is one of the like artists, I'd be like telling all my friends, hey, why don't you go on and vote? Like, it turns out that like 50,000 votes, but only 10,000 comics were sold. Or whatever.
Like Mark Waid could just be because he's
exactly. Yeah, I didn't know if like there was some tweet about, hey, I have a new book, but if you want it to continue, you have to vote. Like, I don't know how much of this is popular. Like, I would have been curious if they'd done it blind, but I guess even then they could still promote it. But if they didn't put the credits on the first, so you would just vote on the book without knowing who did it. But I think that's probably silly or whatever. And then the other thing I want to say is I did read the Usagi Yojimbo from IDW. I flipped through it.
It didn't look good to me.
Just to be a counterpoint to Kevin, it's a pretty standard Usagi story.
Yeah. No way.
That has a piece of Japanese history that's researched, and they give you the little text piece in the back explaining that, folded in, and it's got some magical elements. There's always like demons and things in it,
And so I didn't think it was anything out of the ordinary. Like, it seemed like a regular Usagi story. Like, he blunders onto the scene. It's set up. I think it's supposed to be a 3-issue arc from what it says at the top. So it seems like all the players are introduced. The twist is given at the end. Like, it's one is a recurring character. And like I said, there's a magical element, and he's going to face these evil... You know, he fights a lot of evil spirits and demons and things like that. So I didn't think there was anything... His comment that it was some unusual departure and dreary and boring seemed a little harsh. Well, I feel like it's like a standard Usagi story.
Well, it's unlike any Usagi story I've ever seen. So I guess the classics... I guess I hate Usagi or the modern stuff.
That's fine. You don't have to.
Who knew I hated Stan Sakai? This is a great episode.
So
it's like I've seen some of the space stuff, or then I was reading some of the Fantagraphics collection.
I will say the space is probably
exactly like that.
I will say the space is in the minority. You know, most of the adventures do occur in feudal Japan. Like it's not mostly in space, and he just decided to throw one in Japan to mix it up a little. Like, most of it's in feudal Japan, and most of it has some historical thing that he wheels into it. And like I said, he fights a lot of demons and mysteries. I mean, sometimes they fight real people.
He's kind of like a Hellboy.
Yeah. I think he likes the
puppet theater, apparently.
I think he likes the mythology of it, and like the idea that there are spirits, and I guess, and I don't, what I know about Japanese mythology is gotten from comic books, but I guess there's a lot of like spirits and demons and
Dragon Balls.
That's kind of how it all works.
Yokai Watch and all that in Corpse Delivery Service. Like, if you see any of these things, there's always like demons and spirits.
Yeah, it's just not. It's not. Like I said, it's not something I indulge in a lot of. But that seems to be a running bit and the feudal bits. But like I said, there are tales where it's all. They're all mortals, and it's some sort of court intrigue is another one I seem to remember because of the complicated rules about society and class and honor and everything. Those also can run, you know, play with that structure.
I just thought this was going to be exciting, and it didn't turn out to be exciting.
Well, I can say it's a setup issue.
Mm-hmm. I mean, after all my limited knowledge and my limited reading, and with all the cartoons and everything, I'm like, this. I would put this on the bottom compared to everything else I've seen of the character and read of the character, which is limited.
But I feel the pacing is about. I don't feel like it was particularly slower paced than some of the other ones, but that's I don't know. I felt like I said, it seemed to me like it was a pretty standard Usagi story. Like, it starts with a big action piece, which I thought you'd like. That's all real. Where his one-time nemesis, or the guy he runs into. Because we've seen that guy before. The one that opens up fighting the demons. Sasuke. I don't know if that's how you say it. I never know where the accent goes in those, but could be Sasuke or whatever. That guy. That's all real, Kevin. It opens up with a big fight sequence. You know, wow. So it's not all dreary puppet work.
What I've learned from this is I need to read more Usagi.
No, I think what you've learned is you don't need... you just need to read the space stuff, and that's it.
I need to go read the Fantagraphics collection, come here, and talk about... the genius of Stan Sakai, rather than bad-mouthing him for one issue of some modern limited series.
Well, and it's also fair to say, look, maybe it's not going to have a good twist. And I will say, this mystery is probably not going to be Agatha Christie or whatever. I think we've seen enough of the characters. I have a theory that I'm not going to say to spoil it, in case I turn out to be correct. But, you know, I mean, I guess the fun is in getting there. And these things generally aren't. But a lot of times there is some element to, like, what's causing the spirits to be disturbed. Like, what was the inciting incident? Like, what, somebody did something wrong or whatever, fouled one of them or did something. And that's, if you get to that, that makes sometimes makes the problem go away. Or you just chop it in half with your swords. Whoa. Okay, that's scary. That's very scary. Yeah.
So during this episode, we've had a cat throwing up in the background, a thunderstorm, and some other stuff.
Man, I hope this isn't Kevin's last episode. So, Phil, if he gets struck by lightning, are we going to be safe? Or are we all...
Well, I think so, because now we don't have to worry about Kevin's reviews.
Well, I meant, like, is the electricity going to travel through the line and zap us, too?
Yeah, it's true. We better have this.
We might all be put into a metal shark bro of the same person, and then we might have to do something.
Or we could turn it into Kevin bros. Worst nightmare.
Well, I don't know if Mephisto's going to show up, though. Wait, he couldn't have been Mephisto, right? Did he go by Beelzebub or did he go by Mephisto? I was thinking of Marvel. I mean, I know that's a common devil name, but I just think if you're in comics,
he goes by Beelzebra.
Yeah, there you go. See, you got to have a bro-related pun. To be thematically accurate. Good. I'm glad. Well, I just finished The Good Omens, which is not directly comics, that. But
loved it.
That was on the Amazon down here. Yep. And that was a good really show. Good. Yeah. I just finished it last night. Not
well, they used to offer the Amazon here without the movies and the TV shows and everything, and it was like, why bother?
Actually, we just started using that. We've been using the Amazon Prime for the shipping and everything. And my wife was like, oh, let's watch The Good Omens. And we also watched, that was what we turned it on for. And then I watched a Jim Gaffigan stand-up special. And I'm like, well, now I'm using another streaming service. Like, I don't have enough
I'm new
TV
to
and comics.
But it's worth it for the deliveries alone if you order a lot.
Yeah, like that's why we had it.
My manga Amazon.
I don't know. I guess I'm at the sweet spot where they're like, you can get your stuff within 2 days. And I'm like, I already get my stuff in 2 days. I'm like, they offer nothing that's great.
I want to get back to this. So, Kevin, you don't use credit cards? You pay in Bitcoin? I like you internet guys.
Who wants one payment method?
Bitcoin is real?
What is this, 1997?
I use credit cards for almost everything, so I guess I haven't made the transition to cryptocurrency. Which, which cryptocurrencies? Do you use Ether, too?
What's the one that's from Legion of Superheroes? Isn't there a... Oh, jeez.
Space credits?
Yeah, maybe credits. That's what I use. I use credits. I use gold porous latinum.
All right. Well, I think we've reached a good point before Kevin gets electrocuted.
Yes. Sadly, but we're going to have to do the other content for the next episode. And I really wanted to get to this Wizard magazine.
Oh, yes. Well, we'll tease that. Tease that for next episode. But I wanted to thank everyone for listening. And if you guys want to insert whatever weird sign-offs you're using now, you can.
I mean, crackers.
Edit the stuff out where I said, screw you, artist, jokingly.
And okay.
That's my sign-off.
Well, I might edit out your sign-off. All right. Thanks, folks.